You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
I worry about our internet connection tonight.
Yeah, I can't get to United or the Wall Street Journal. I think the internet's down.
Damn you, Chinese hackers!
There we go. I'm back online.
Oh, good for you.
I've got an IP address.
It just worked.
I think we just ran out.
It's precious IPv4 addresses. Barrett has them.
Don't need no 6.
All right, well, welcome to Technology Bites.
Perfect show.
I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Ruvals.
Lee is out tonight. He did not want to hack his phlegm and vitriol all over the microphones tonight, so...
Not our kind of hacker.
No, not that kind of hacking. Thank you very much. We didn't need that. All right, come on, give me some internet. Please, internet. All right, so visit us online at geekradio.com. You could also hang out in the IRC, which we may or may not get to be a part of tonight. Ah, I got my internet back. Yay.
I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. And that just means I can get on the IRC, hopefully here soon.
Yeah, it was a little flaky there. I couldn't get a IP for a while, but now it's working.
I know. I don't get it.
So, yeah, I you know, during lunch... When I was away from work, I was at a place that had a television, and the television said that there was a computer glitch, but the glitch had caused the Wall Street Journal, United, and who's the third one?
New York Stock Exchange.
New York Stock Exchange
to
be unavailable. So
they had actually grounded flights, and not only you could not only like not get your frequent flyer miles, but they had did full ground stops.
But how was there a computer glitch that only affected those three companies?
Well, I heard that there's been a lot of misinformation flying around. I heard that the last thing I heard about United was it was a router, it was a piece of routing gear, so possibly unrelated, or who knows. I don't know anything about the Wall Street Journal. Like, happened, I've just heard
Their site went down, I guess, and then...
All around the same time.
Within 30 minutes... So yeah, the New York Stock Exchange and the Wall Street Journal both had problems around the same time. And then it was 30 minutes or an hour later, the Wall Street Journal got up a partial or limited homepage, is what the CNN or whoever
under construction
called it. Yeah, and then it didn't say anything about United except they kept showing over and over this stock footage of some planes moving on, you know, at a terminal on some tarmac. And that, so I couldn't tell anything from the screen except, and I'm thinking that, you know, it's not some glitch that's
the news articles
three
aren't much
completely
better.
Disparate
yeah.
companies. I mean, maybe they all have something in the same data center, in the same rack or row of racks. You
yeah,
know?
I thought
but
maybe the
backend
content
weird.
Provider, like maybe they're using Akamai or, you know, like some
yeah,
kind of big
you
CDN.
You think that would affect more than just
those,
three
guys,
companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems weird that. It would, and they say computer glitch. Like, I don't know.
I wonder why that happened.
Wouldn't the media be a little more savvy these days about that sort of thing? That seems odd to me.
Do you think it's being downplayed? Do you think it's actually something a little bit more nefarious, and they're just saying, "Oh, it's a glitch"? They're telling me it's a glitch, or do you just think it's a large misunderstanding from the part of the media?
It just seems weird to say that there's a computer glitch, and it's caused three different companies. To have problems. I mean,
well, Superman 3 actually did go into a lot more technical detail on how things happened than any news story I've seen today on this. And I've only looked at a couple, like I said, I've just been skimming, and most of them are pretty unsatisfactory as far as what's going on.
I don't think the word glitch, because that sounds like it's like a hardware glitch or a software glitch, and this caused three companies out of the entire world
but halted.
To have problems.
Halted.
They're all separate, though.
Air flight. The deal is stop trading. Yeah,
you're in IT. You're in IT. What it is what is? Oh yeah, we had a glitch. We fixed it. We fixed the glitch.
No, a glitch is something that goes wrong, and before you have a chance to diagnose or repair it, it comes back. So it's like, well, call me back when you have the problem.
Yeah, this glitch was a lot longer than that.
But
either way, nobody fixed it. It just stopped.
They are all unrelated as far as what I've seen and heard on it.
Mainstream media.
Yeah, glitch is a short-lived fault in a system, or if you see something twice, the Matrix. That's what Miriam says.
But they were pitching as computer glitch, not computer glitches cause three separate things to be happening in three separate companies.
Now, if this was all in Texas, we could immediately tie this to Jade Helm.
Yes.
It would be obvious that this is just a sample probing of our networks to make way for the upcoming invasion.
Well, they may have been disconnecting some key router pieces in order to insert the, you know, scanning and scavenging hardware.
We did have the glitch about getting our IP addresses at the beginning of the show.
They needed the terminals where the United planes were going to land and dock when offload troops at Hobby and Intercontinental Air.
They need to scrub the data.
I watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon twice again and didn't see any mention of the Jade Helm. I'm not too sure. So is that real? Is that, cause again, most of my news comes in through the server room. So there are actual rumblings of, like, you know, pre-attack forces or disabling infrastructure.
Tunnels going into Walmarts. Yes.
How widespread is this? Like, is this
Ted Cruz has addressed it.
Really?
Greg Abbott has deployed troops to monitor the exercises.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have seen, here and there, a lot more aircraft up and about.
We could be under the forces of the U.S. Constitution. I mean, it could happen any moment.
Martial law. Yeah. Run by Obama. Black helicopters and concentration camps.
I thought we had our own Texas Marshals. No. Different kind of Marshal.
You know, maybe the Texas Rangers are independent, but, you know, I don't know that they could fight the U.S. military.
I'm going to call in Chuck Norris.
Is that how you call him? I'm going to call in Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris. Here I am. Ow, ow.
One roundhouse, no more Jade Helm.
The problem is Chuck Norris thinks Jade Helm's a real thing, too. So
oh, does he?
Oh. Okay, now this is different.
Well, Jade Helm is a real thing. It's a military exercise.
It's a real military.
For me and our listeners, could you give me like the 30-second elevator speech on why I should be concerned about Jade Helm?
All right. Well, there's the U.S. government's military, combined military forces conduct exercises to train to be ready for stuff, you know, like wars and stuff. And there's places in Texas where they want to conduct their exercises because Texas, and they've done it here in the past, and it's not a big deal, or allegedly shouldn't be a big deal, but they're coming to Texas, and they're bringing in, like, you know, tanks and trucks and personnel and stuff to conduct these exercises. And a group of right-wing nut jobs has decided that this is a ploy. This is a preparatory move by the U.S. government to seize Texas. Or something.
But really, it could just be like the footage you see on the really cool Discovery Channel specials about, you know, special forces training and cool.
Could
tanks
be. And they tried to have a town hall meeting in one of the cities, you know, one of the little towns,
Bastrop,
where they're going to, you know, some of these exercises are happening nearby, and the poor military guy, the spokesman for the army, that was, you know, talking about it to these people, and they were all holding signs and, like, you know, we don't trust you. So it was one of those deals. It was like a YouTube comment section, because there's just no reasoning with anyone.
I mean, the thing is, I remember two huge military exercises that were done in Central Texas
when you're towards Brady.
When I lived there in Central Texas during the, I guess, 80s. There were two separate ones, and everybody welcomed the military rolling through and waving at them, and they even, like, came out to the municipal airport and landed a couple of Apache helicopters and invited everybody to come out and, like, walk around and look in the cockpit and all this
super
stuff.
Super cool.
But now, you know.
Last time I saw him, he was shoved into the back of an Apache helicopter. I wouldn't mind going out that way. That's kind of cool.
But now everybody in the small town seems to, you know, be paranoid, because I think the internet has allowed the crazies to have a larger platform, and they've managed to, like seed paranoia in people that normally wouldn't really have that level of it.
Well, it really goes counter.
Yeah, there's kind of a large bubble that they can stay in that won't give them anything that would be common sense. It would be outside of that bubble. So they listen. So they start at Fox News, but they go over to, like, Alex Jones and Glenn Beck, who have actual radio shows. So it's not even just fringy internet stuff.
But how do these people, these small Texas town rednecks, reconcile determining that this arm of the military is being, you know, bad, and then also support our troops?
Yeah, hold on. I thought they were all, not to be all political show, but I thought they were pro-military. Like, you
yeah,
know,
that's what I would have. This doesn't make sense. It's like
they're pro-military until they come onto our soil and do something.
Go you back know, to Afghanistan.
I think these are the bad military people.
Well,
there's a separation
between, like, thinking that, okay, we have the troops, and then Obama is the commander in chief using them for ill. The troops are probably good.
We have the American troops, and then we have the evil troops.
Ooh, do they have, like, the hood masks? They look like Cobra from G.I. Joe.
I'm thinking of the F troops.
Have you been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Because that's actually a secret coded thing about what's going on in our U.S. military now.
Well,
they split, and there's Hydra, and then there's, like, real S.H.I.E.L.D. and this other S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's all so confused. Nobody in the military even knows
who's Cobra Commander.
These yahoos, I mean, they think that, you know, what are they going to do? Is it going to be, they're going to reenact scenes from Red Dawn?
Is Dick Cheney Destro?
Wolverines.
Not the remake, though. The remake was
horrible. Pee in the radiator.
You guys are about to say, you gotta pour this blood in the radiator and drink this pee. I think you got that backwards.
The big question, you know, that I don't get, the part you know, if I was gonna go see a movie called Jade Helm, and they gave the plot so far, you know, under the cover of some military exercise, they're gonna move some troops into Texas and then try to take over. My question would be sort of, what is the supervillain want from this? What are they going to accomplish? Are they going to take our resources, or, you know, take over the government?
Well, apparently
Samuel L. Jackson wants to change the weather. That's
apparently Texas is so awesome that everybody covets it and they want it for their very own. I don't know.
I think they want control. they want control. People don't want to lose control. They don't want to lose their independence.
Well, you know, it's real. I blame the internet. You know, a long time ago, I used to think that, you know, technology is awesome. It's going to give a voice to everyone.
And it gave a voice to everyone.
Wouldn't that be great? Now it's giving a voice to everyone. And it's like, what have we done?
Where's the squelch?
The original hackers that tried to stop us in the early days of technology bites, like, do not share this information. Do not open Pandora's box.
They were right.
I'm watching in the real world blog comments come to life. You know, it's like you used to have to go look out. You know, there's that comment, you know, there's that thing where people say, don't read the comments. If you go read a news article about something you're interested in, don't ruin it for yourself.
Unless you want to lose faith in humanity, and yeah,
which you will.
Even locally, the Chronicle is the worst because that's they live close to me. Those people are out there somewhere.
Yeah, I actually heard recently that Crescent City Beignets had reopened. And so I was like, oh, really? And so I searched and I found a Chronicle article that said Crescent City had reopened. And they actually linked to Houston subreddit. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But then I made the mistake of going to the comments. And one of the comments was, I've been to some of these, in quote, Cajun places, and it's just got a bunch of Orientals. Is this that kind of Cajun
place? Usually goes,
I'm like, what?
Racist remark, non sequitur, racist remark, some kind of hatred in general, not really directed at anyone.
It's just absurd.
And then maybe someone that says, aw.
troll,
yeah, rinse and repeat. There's nothing worthwhile. It's just all horrible.
Billy goat, troll, bridge.
Yeah.
I know he's not popular right now to use his humor or anything else or take a drink from him, but Bill Cosby
or
a
sweater.
Had
yeah,
a
careful
joke,
now.
Had a joke about
I don't know.
Bill Cosby had a joke about cocaine that I think applies to the internet. And he said that somebody told him, you know, cocaine, you know, it makes you more of who you already are. And he said, well, what if you're an a-hole?
And the internet is the cocaine.
And the internet is like cocaine and makes you more of what you are. And what if you are.
I think the oatmeal actually has one that's probably more safe for kids.
Just a second.
It shows internet plus anonymity equals just, you know, just raging horrible Blurred. Person that just, yeah, shouts everything
and so
out.
What are the pudding pops?
Yeah, there's no good way to go. I'm going to go put on my sweater and y'all wrap this stuff up.
All right, you got to be careful here. We're thinking and all over the place.
Yeah.
All right, so welcome to Technology Bites. You know, the only reason that, I mean, I don't know why we got off on that tangent, but it's
we've already stopped answering questions as part of Jade Helm, because we're taking the knowledge back.
Right, we're starting to backtrack and roll back all the damage we've done, and give us your guns. All right, well, we're glad you tuned in. It's going to be an interesting evening, apparently, so that's good. We got everybody here except Lee, so we hope that he's tuning in and getting well, and will be back with us next week. All right, so geekradio.com, irc.cuckoo.com. If you want to play on the IRC, you can go to our website and join up right there, or you can use your own IRC client and join irc.cuckoo.com and channel Tech Bites. And that's all there is for that. We're going to go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites info shot. Take it away, info shot, he said.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
A perfect show. What happened? Did we lose
it? It looks
internet?
Like his computer went down.
Glitch
in the matrix.
Did you turn the power off? The power
glitch.
Options? Did you run out of batteries?
No, my computer's fine.
Yeah?
The power's fine. The internet's fine. But the
sleep mode.
But yeah, Google logged me out.
Mm. Why did it do that?
Google needs an update.
Obviously, the Google people were listening to us and didn't want us to
glitch. I got air quote your glitches here. All right. I hope that's not somebody wanting to call in and talk about Jade Helm.
I'm pretty sure it is. I'll answer it.
You should answer it and see what it is just in case. But
you never know.
Y'all started it.
You could already be the winner of some huge, fabulous
hey,
prize.
Look, you know, I'm willing to accept. You know, all right. So, at any rate, so we're going to work on getting logged back into the Googles. So that we can get Peter Hughes back and do the info shot.
Okay. I'm back.
Hooray! Keep the nerve gases.
You already played it?
Yeah, we did play that.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, you cut out long before you even got to start to talking about the news. So, anyways, as you may have noticed in the first few minutes of the show, Jade Helm, no, Cyber Armageddon is over, we think. It was a confusing day of digital disasters, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, United Airlines, and the Wall Street Journal, which all experienced mysterious technological glitches today. The New York Stock Exchange did come back and begin trading around 3:15 this afternoon. That would be Eastern time. United is backing up. They lost, I think, about 2 hours. The Wall Street Journal, I don't know. It sounds like they're back. So, and theirs was obviously the least important and concerning of the three. So far, the White House and the Department of Homeland Security have said that this is not a cyber attack. In the case of the stock exchange, multiple reports suggest that the real culprit might have been a faulty systems upgrade, though the Stock Exchange has not confirmed that explanation. See, mysterious glitch, the real definition of mysterious glitch is either they know and they're too embarrassed to say, somebody knows why it stopped working or what wasn't working. And some of it may just be they don't want to say because they don't want to give away where they either didn't do what they should have or maybe it was something where they should have been prepared for it and they weren't. So that's where mysterious glitches come from. Oh, here's another mysterious glitch. Like the hacking team, the company that sold tools to different places, including the FBI, got hacked themselves. It's a private Italian spying agency called Hacking Team. And they got hacked and all their internal documents or large amounts of their internal documents got released. And it turns out, as people look through them, then the FBI is one of their customers. The FBI is not in good company there. This is from an article in Wired. According to several spreadsheets within the hacked archive, which contain a list of Hacking Team's customers, many of the other governments who bought the same software are repressive regimes like Sudan and Bahrain. Nice. So the documents show that the FBI first purchased the company's RCS in 2001. That's a product. RCS stands for Remote Control Service, otherwise known as Galileo, which is Hacking Team's premier spy product. It's a piece of hacking software that's been used by the Ethiopian regime to target journalists that were based in Washington, D.C. It was also detected in an attack on a Moroccan media outlet and on a human rights activist from the United Arab Emirates. The deal is once a target's computer's been infected, RCS is able to siphon off data and listen in on communications before they've been encrypted, obviously if you're getting it direct from the machine. According to researchers based at the University of Toronto's Citizen Lab who have monitored the use of RCS throughout the world, the tool can also record Skype calls, emails, instant messages, and passwords typed into a web browser. So it sounds kind of like malware, I guess, unless you're a legal agency, I guess. The FBI spent $773,000 since 2011 with them, and including 60,000 euros on maintenance. So just interesting. And then to follow that one, the chief of the FBI testified before the Senate recently, that the government should have the right to lawfully access any device or electronic form of communication with a lawful court order, even if it is encrypted. Basically, he said that there, he told the Senate, he complained that the keys necessary to decrypt communications and electronic devices often reside, quote, solely in the hands of the end user, unquote, which they said is emblematic of the so-called going dark problem, unquote. He said companies should bake encryption backdoors into their products to allow lawful access. He said that we're not asking to expand the government surveillance authority, but rather we are asking to ensure that we can continue to obtain electronic information and evidence pursuant to the legal authority that Congress has provided us to keep America safe. That was from the joint prepared remarks of Comey, FBI Director James Comey, and Deputy Attorney General Sally Quillian Yates. Quote, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Justice believes that the challenges posed by the going dark problem are grave, growing, and extremely complex. To counter this, they said the government has been actively developing their own decryption tools. That's good, huh? That makes you feel comfortable. Senate hearing comes among a growing chorus of government officials calling for encryption backdoors. Apple has come under attack by some government officials for making its latest iPhone encrypted by default. Such a configuration likely precludes the authorities from accessing data on iPhones directly from a locked device's hardware, even with a warrant. So the White House, according to the testimony, is formulating a position on whether to seek legislation demanding the backdoors, but it's not been clear what they think. For now, U.S.-based companies are not required to provide the government backdoors into their wares. The law surrounding this issue is the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act of 1994, commonly referred to as CALEA. It requires telcos to make their phone networks amenable to wiretaps, but it doesn't apply to phone hardware or most other communication services. So Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, told the committee he wasn't sold on the backdoor idea and said it could create vulnerabilities. Smart man. Quote, strong encryption has revolutionized the online marketplace and protects American businesses and consumers from cybercrime, espionage, identity theft, stalking, and other threats on the internet. Undermining strong encryption could make our data more vulnerable, he said. So you can find links to all these articles at the Geek Radio website. And there's a link to this, and at the end of the article, there's a link to see videos of the hearings and testimony if you're interested in finding out more about that one. Another side effect on the hacking team, the hack of hacking team, is basically, again, to sort of sum up, the hacking software spyware company hacking team got compromised. There were 400 gigabytes of internal files, source code, and emails made available on torrent sites for anyone to download. So it's kind of like WikiLeaks 2, but for a company instead of governments. While there's some embarrassing communications contained within the leaks, some serious software flaws have also been discovered. Basically, there were some zero-day things that that hacking team knew about and used that now, of course, the source code and the information about it is out in the public, particularly one of some vulnerabilities in Flash that were being exploited by a hacking team to break into PCs. At least one of the vulnerabilities has now been patched by Adobe. Users are advised to update their Flash as soon as possible. Two vulnerabilities have been discovered affecting Adobe's Flash software and Microsoft Windows. Hacking team describes the Flash flaw as, quote, the most beautiful Flash bug in the past 4 years, unquote, suggesting the company may have been using this flaw to access people's machine for quite a while. The vulnerability allows malicious attackers to execute code on a victim's machine through a website. It affects Windows, OS X, Linux, and can be used against browsers like, uncommonly used browsers like Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, and Safari. Hey, hacking team appears to have used this hole to install its own exploit kits and monitor remotely control PCs. Of course, Adobe is now aware of the vulnerability and One patch has been issued, but given the vast amount of security issues with Flash over the years, you may want to be able, you may want to stop using it if you're able to. You know, if you can avoid it, then you don't have to worry about it. Second, Win vulnerability affects an Adobe font driver in Windows. All 32-bit and 64-bit versions of Windows from Windows XP through Windows 8.1 are affected. According to researchers, the flaw lets attackers elevate their privileges on a machine to administrator level. Nice. Combined with the Adobe Flash exploit, it's a powerful way to hijack a PC. Quote, according to a Microsoft spokesperson, we believe the overall risk for customers is limited as this vulnerability could not on its own allow an adversary to take control of a machine. We encourage customers to apply the Adobe update and are working on a fix. So they've read about it and are working on it, but I don't know how comforting that feels to anybody who maybe was already not liking Flash and if you had some concerns about Windows, then this might not help with those. A couple of small other things. You know, sometimes you like climb a mountain and you know, when you get to the top, what do you want to do? You want to like share your selfies and do stuff like that. Well, now when you go to Mount Fuji this summer, you apparently will be able to get free Wi-Fi from the Japanese government. It's 12,000 feet up. NTT Docomo and local prefectures are setting up 8 hotspots along Mount Fuji, including the summit, several cottages, and a resort facility, which will be accessible with a special password. Although you have to wonder why they're worried about someone leeching off a Wi-Fi connection that's that remote. The Wi-Fi access is not just about, the big thing with it is it gives hikers the ability to check weather and potentially request help in areas where there's no cell service. It's a lot easier to make Wi-Fi in it. But you can't hang around on the mountain with it because apparently you'll only be able to use the Wi-Fi service for 72 hours after you first log in for some reason, I guess, so you don't just camp there and keep using their free Wi-Fi. And we mentioned it came up kind of vaguely and got a little more information on it about the Houston Spaceport. And the Houston Spaceport is actually connected to Houston's airports. So it's a like city-tied thing. On June 30th, 2015, the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, announced that the city of Houston had been approved as home to the United States' 10th licensed commercial spaceport. It's going to be at Ellington Airport, just south of downtown, and would offer the nation's fourth largest city a focal point for aerospace innovation. So pack your bags. Well, I wonder what you have to take off to go on a space, to go into space. Do you have to, like, totally stripped down, or do they just take your shoes? The big things, they're trying to make this a regional center for a cluster of aerospace activities, including but not limited to component and composite development and fabrication, space vehicle assembly, zero gravity scientific and medical experiments, micro satellites, astronaut training and development, and space tourism. So cool on that. It is part of the Houston airport system. So it will be run by the same people who bring you the, you know, hobby and Bush Intercontinental up at the, up in North Houston. So, the team has been recognized by the FAA for airfield operations and safety. So, you know, they've got cool pictures of the concepts that they want to do. I don't know when they'll start building new buildings, but at least we know we've got a spaceport in Houston, so you don't have to worry about the spaceport race unless you're in one of those 10 other cities that's also got a spaceport. And finally, Logitech is going to rebrand its new products. They announced that they're doing a major rebranding effort with a greater focus on design. And so they're not going to get rid of the Logitech name completely, but they're going to have new products that are under their new moniker, which I think it's LOGI. So I'm thinking that's Logi. So they're trying to kind of do, it sounds like they're doing something along the lines of Apple, where when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he refocused them on design and on improving their design. So they feel like, let's see, according to their Logitech representative, when the company was founded in 1981, tech was almost a new term. Logitech needed tech to be part of its name so consumers could understand that Logitech was a technology company. Today, technology rules our lives. The presence of it is implied, making tech non-essential to the name. So given that, we'll now be calling the show Knowledgy Bites, right? And that's the news.
Every time I hear Spaceport, I think of monorail.
What's it spelled? Spaceport. We need Conan O'Brien to come on and do that.
Keep watching the skis.
The Hacking Team stuff, if you have any sympathy for them at all, if you go out and look at any of their YouTube videos in which they're like advertising what they do, it's pretty seedy. And also you've got to realize that a lot of the tools they've been selling, these have been like the tools that have gone out to like the Middle East to suppress journalists and suppress people getting information back out of the country. So they're not exactly the good guys.
And they're out of where?
They're Italian. Mm. But yeah, they've got employees, I think, all over. It's just shady.
Well, it does call into, you know, focus the kind of line. There's black cat and white hat hacking. I think there's a large amount of gray hat hacking, because obviously if you're in an agency or a company that wants to sell products or that wants to help, you know, law enforcement agencies, then you don't reveal the vulnerability because you're going to use it.
Yeah, honestly, I would say there's almost no such thing as pure white hat or pure black hat. Like, I'm sure there's some, but I think it's kind of an extreme. Like, I think for the most part, most people have some amount of one or the other.
Most people don't roll pure 20s. They come in somewhere in between, yeah.
Yeah, I went to college with a guy, though, who amazingly could always roll that. He was the biggest cheater whenever you played any game. It was just amazing.
I was going to say,
because it never happened when you were watching.
If somebody rolls all 20s, then they're probably black cat.
Yeah. They're gaming that game. No, it has caused a lot of people wondering, like, what can we do to stop Western companies from arming, you know, people that shouldn't have those kinds of tools. So I know the EFF has kind of gotten into it. But again, no one's really listened to what Snowden, you know, what his revelations.
The only thing you could do is pay them more than the other people are willing to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's always going to be a market for those kind of tools. And if it's not an official company, at least I guess they're paying taxes somewhere, I guess Italian taxes. You know, but I guess it's better than going to the black market and buying 0 days for, you know, undisclosed amounts.
Which is possible.
Happen. Yeah, and that is happening in places too, I'm sure. It's just,
I'd really hate to see something happen to your data.
Throw some awesome parties in
Vegas.
Well,
that's
Vegas,
a nice
though.
Airline, newspaper, and stock exchange you got there.
Although they're cracking down over there. I think, the Lizard Team? Lizard Squad, that's the name. The guys that shut down the Xbox network and PlayStation network on Christmas, they convicted one of the teens with that. I think his name was Z-Kill. They gave him over 500,000 counts. No, I'm sorry, 50,000 counts of computer fraud and computer shenanigans.
Wow.
And all kinds of stuff. Let me go look this up. 50,700 instances of aggravated computer break-ins.
What?
So this is serious.
What was his sentence?
Now, the nice thing is he was 17 years old, so they commuted it. He's so more or less, I think he's got to like go fight for the good guys for a little while. They confiscated his PCs, and he had to pay like $4,000 worth of damages for the property obtained through his crimes.
Getting out pretty good.
It's getting out extremely easy, especially after what happened to the Pirate Bay guys.
Gig.
Yeah, this is probably going to launch him into stardom. He's going to be like, hey, who else has this many?
He could be the next Mitnick.
He's going to be like Zero Cool.
Yeah, he should change his name from Z-Kill to Z-Cool.
I have a feeling he's going to stay away from U.S. soil, though, since he He knows if he stays in Finland, he can get a slap on the wrist as opposed to what he might get.
Stay away from Redmond and Japan, I would assume. Anywhere Sony has reach.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Yeah, or where Xbox fans are all over the place.
Yeah, you don't want the Yakuza popping up and saying, hey.
We like that Xbox.
No, and then the only other thing I had to in reply to these, it's lame that you're not here, because when you're here, we can go like, hey, this is, you know, about this news. But the whole key escrow stuff and everyone complaining about that, I think 14 or 15 fairly preeminent cryptologists from MIT submitted a paper today saying, hey, it's not technically feasible to have unfettered access for the government and still keep everything else secure. I mean, they likened it to, mandating insecurity by requiring government access to all data and communications. They're saying like, hey, leave the key into the front door, but that leaves it for anybody that wants to come look under the mat to get into your place. I mean, that's really kind of what it comes down to.
Right. There's one, you know, I don't buy into the necessarily overall philosophy that government can't do anything right, but I must say that based on their track record, government and technology and advanced technology, they don't go together and they don't use it well, especially the FBI, who has spent huge sums of money to try and build some new systems to like manage their evidence and do other things like that and have been unsuccessful repeatedly with it. I don't think I want to dumb down what encryption people have available in their apps and their software to a level that that Barney Fife can figure it out.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's going down.
And think that clever crooks can't.
That's special agent Barney Fife to you.
Now, Andy,
that's cyber administrator Barney Fife to all of us. Andy, I got my iPad. It froze again. Well, shake it up and we'll start it over.
All right, I'm going to give you your one IP address. Be careful, Barney.
Keep getting hacked by 127.0.0.1.
Oh, you guys. You're so silly.
Us and our geek humor.
And our old people humor.
Yeah, I guess there's that too.
Meet me at the
fishing. You know the words?
Yeah, there are words.
Whoa, I only know the whistly part.
Yeah, there are words. I learned that a long time ago. That was an actual song that they were whistling.
But it's so the song existed before.
It's not in the Andy Griffith Show. Like, no, they don't use the words.
But they whistle.
They whistle it. They whistle like Winopi's got the fishing
tune song. From a song that actually exists.
There we go.
It's the Andy Griffith Show.
Starring.
Andy Griffith Technology Show. Oh,
Groovehouse. Aunt Groovehouse.
Stay tuned for Aunt B's hacking tips.
And Groovehouse for the lulz.
And Groovehouse as Otis.
There aren't any like massive lulls going on right now. I mean, lulsec is pretty much, I mean, everything's kind of boring right now, right? I mean, the only real big players are like the state actors and the baddies. No one's doing stuff for
fun. Anonymous keeps doing random things.
Here and there, but they seem a lot more disjointed and it's a lot more smaller local things, which is cool, but it's not as much lulls.
Yeah. I would agree, as far as I know.
Here's something for the lulls.
Hold on, I've got to get my computer.
Speaking of lulls.
La, 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 la. Here it is. Okay, I can't press.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me.
That's Griffith.
Yeah, I was about to say, from, yeah.
We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot.
Yeah, so words.
Did you know that song from the radio, or how did you know that?
From growing up with Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith is my dad. I'm Opie. I'm all Aunt B.
Ron, my friends.
there was a cover of that song put out by a band back in the 80s, and I found it on an album, on a record, and I used to play it on my I just thought, that's just very cool. It turned out it was a real song.
Andy Griffith was a, as I stutter, he's a or I guess it was a lisp. He was a Southern gospel singer back before he got into TV, and he was a comic too. Like I've heard a lot of his spoken stuff.
I knew he'd
done
stand up and stuff.
I think a lot of that came out of, you know, him speaking to congregations maybe. Because a lot of the stuff I'd heard were like funny stories that sounded like they would be delivered to a church group circa, you know, like 1960.
He had a famous one about like playing football.
Right? Big Orange. Yeah, the Big Orange drink, right? Yeah, he left the football stand to go get himself a big thing of Big Orange. It's the orange drink. And yeah, how is his things, you know, how all the people were coming out and his whole experience of seeing a large game, a large football game when he was, you know, kind of supposedly from the country. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. I will miss him.
At least they had legitimate words for the song. It's not like, you know, the Star Trek theme has words, but that's because Gene Roddenberry figured out that if he wrote words to it, that he would get a credit and he would get paid for every time they played the theme for the show. So it was just literally a cash grab. And so he wrote horrible words for the song, you know, for the original Star Trek theme and, you know, got and added it to the thing so that he got credit alongside instead of just the guy who wrote the music. It's Alexander Courage wrote the little stuff. Yeah, and it's got all the quality of somebody who does not know how to write songs if you go look up, if you go find the words.
Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in the starflight. Is this real?
yeah, true.
This is real. Yeah, I know he'll find like,
you,
star clustered reaches.
Can
love,
you sing it? No, no. Sing it.
Love,
sing it.
Strange love of star start, woman teaches. Kirk wrote this. This sounds like some sleazy Kirk kind of like.
Start at the beginning and sing it.
I'm actually not.
Now, what we really need before he's too old to do it is we need William Shatner to do the Shatner version of it to the Star Trek theme.
These
if
words,
that's possible.
These words are kind of a hokey '60s love song. It's not space themed really whatsoever. It says starlight, starflight, and that's it.
I think I may have found it here.
First star I see tonight.
Fast forward. Oh, they said it had words.
There we go.
There it is.
This is about Kirk, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're right about it being a real star cluster or something.
Yeah. MASH had lyrics, too.
Ever so slightly misogynistic.
Oh, I knew the MASH song had lyrics, because I knew that from the movie.
Well, yeah, right?
Yeah, Suicide is Painless.
That's a great song.
No, I had seen these before, but I always thought they were made up. Like, I always thought someone added them, you know, like, after the fact. I didn't know that Roddenberry actually did it as a grab. That's cool, Pete.
I do have, and for more, while we're playing music, there's a new bumper for Bite of the Apple that's not scary for anybody.
Really?
If we want to try that. Yeah, it's added to the show prep page.
Is it whistling?
Is it the Russian Yololo?
Andy Griffith scat things over it.
Well, let's see if I can get to the page here. So, Bite of the Apple, new theme song. Here we go.
Happy version.
That's not scary. That's
kind of measure. It's got the Apple boot sound, the old one, and then you know the restart boot sound, and then Peace from Happy Tree Friends, and then the Bite of the Apple. And on the cool Bite of the Apple stuff, we have this week in Apple iPhone 6S rumors. Most of them are not new to you. The biggest thing is apparently the base model will still be 16 gigs of the potential iPhone 6S. The Wall Street Journal, apparently while their site was still up, said that the iPhone will have a force touch display, which it kind
you
of
you must touch it. You cannot resist touching it. You are forced
Force touch is really basically a touchscreen version of like right click. The big thing is you can add additional menus or options that become accessible when a user presses harder on the display, as opposed to a standard tap or a long press action, which are differentiated by how long the finger's on the screen, not how hard it's pressing down.
If you press it really hard.
The other rumor. What?
Say if you press it really hard, you can get like rainbow colors and then
and a cracking sound.
Yeah, and then a cool like shattered screen app will come up.
Has anybody taken a magnet to a smartphone to see what it does to the display?
It shouldn't do anything.
No, because it doesn't have the CRT problem of like the magnet, you know, the degaussing kind of issue
there's
that
no
you would have with
the magnetic issues with LCDs or with these kind of.
No,
displays.
With the strong enough, if you got like a rare earth magnet, you could probably do a little bit of damage if you were to pull or move around circuitry.
You don't
want to
put a magnet
okay.
over your phone.
I still wouldn't do it. Because you've got memory. You've also probably got, you could have
you
could, no, memory.
Actually, you should start a website and call it Does It Magnet?
I just remember having some speakers with really big magnets next to my monitor back in the day and having the two corners of my monitor kind
of yeah.
change colors.
That's from the CRT.
Yeah, and that's why there's speakers where they advertise that they're shielded for video or else where the monitor is shielded. So there's also a rumor that there will be another color added to the lineup for the phones.
Too many choices.
Beyond the current gray, silver, and gold. I wonder what that would be. Would it be
rose?
Black? It wouldn't be black. It'd rose be gold.
Rose
oh,
gold.
And I guess the final Apple thing, rumory thing. This isn't so rumory because it's from the beta and that. Apparently, Apple is revamping their two-factor authentication for iOS 9 and OS 10 El Capitan. They have a new – it's different from Apple's existing two-step verification system using, quote, different methods, unquote, to trust devices and deliver verification codes. The idea is they want to make it more streamlined but also more safe. They're talking about perhaps if you enable two-factor authentication that when you make purchases on your Mac – or Windows, like in iTunes, it'll require you to append a 6-digit code to the end of your password on every purchase. And what they would do is send that to one of your other devices. In other words, if you order it off your iPad, it would send it to your computer or your phone or some other device. It would send you this 6-digit code so that you add that to the password. And, of course, then that makes even the crappiest password pretty secure. I guess the main thing is it counts on you having multiple Apple devices, which I'm sure from Apple's point of view isn't a bad thing. And for people who already do, then it's very secure and convenient. So, sort of a step to the future. There's going to be more two-factor authentication for people who want their stuff to be secure. And this is Apple's attempt at improving it. And that's all the Apple stuff. For Try By or Fry, we should wait till after the top of the hour. Here's a little pre-show, like a teaser for people so that they know to stay tuned. You know, they can just sit in their driveway if they're in the car and they get home. I looked up a number of things for, you know, hurricane season is coming. And so that means you should be getting prepared for it. But what about getting prepared for your technology? And so I found a number of things that we can talk about that might help people out to be ready for hurricane season or just any kind of disaster like, oh, lots of rain and flooding where they have to stay at their home. So we can do that after the top of the hour.
I have a possible filler. Did you get to watch Mr. Robot second episode?
Yes, although I was doing a little bit of other coding in the background, so I need to watch it
again. Did you have an opinion?
I need to watch it again.
Because I haven't tried to watch it yet, so I still don't.
You probably watched it, right?
Jay said it made him feel unsure.
It was not the follow up I was expecting.
It didn't catch you like the first one did.
Yeah, there's some potential there. I still think there's potential there, but it did not live up to the premiere episode. Perhaps I enjoyed the first episode so much knowing that I wasn't immediately going to have another one. Like even in a week, because I watched it a couple
of times. It also set expectations, because I watched the first episode only on the very, you know, roughest of your recommendations, and I didn't have high expectations for it. So it kind of caught me off
guard.
Jay
liked it, so I was not holding out much hope.
No, and I mean, I usually don't watch anything. I don't watch a lot, so it's like it takes me a lot, you know, it takes a lot for me to watch anything, so for me to invest, you know, an hour into watching that, that was decent. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I've been so burned by so many different, you know, quote-unquote hacker, tech, whatever kind of films that I wasn't expecting a lot.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching it tonight now that I remember that it's going on. All right, so we are coming up on the... Well, we still got about... That was not much filler. What did you think, by the way?
I still haven't watched the second episode, so I still am, you know, on the warm afterglow of the first episode, fairly excited by this Hackers meets Fight Club kind of, you know, show. But I don't know. I was looking for a second opinion.
Since I don't have cable, I can only watch the first episode. Yeah, all the other ones I've got to pay for.
I don't think Barrett has cable.
Oh, well.
I don't have cable. Barrett's got other
means. What? No, I haven't watched this. I mean, yeah, I've only heard about the second episode. No, it didn't grab me, but again, like I said, I was working on other stuff, but usually stuff that's really good, I won't just be coding the entire time. It'll catch my attention. So I don't know.
The lead actor kind of has a Marty Feldman thing sort of going there. He's got that weird look.
He kind of does.
He kind of does.
I guess another piece of just geeky news is Harry Shearer has signed on to continue doing the same voice.
Because what else was he going to do?
There was no more Spinal Taps.
His podcast is weird, but, you know, not compelling.
Now, who is this?
Harry Shearer, the voice of
most of the actors.
Of a lot of
Mr. Burns, Ned Flanders.
Oh, okay.
And what, so, of course, the obvious thing is that everyone's headline said, excellent.
Yeah.
What season are they on? Like, they've been around for 25, 27 years.
Those kids
years?
Are still in elementary school.
They are.
Yeah, they've got it's gone so far that when Marge and Homer flash back to their like young relationship or whatever, it's in the 90s.
Season 26.
Have you read the conspiracy theory that suggests that the Simpsons is all paused at the point that Homer went into the coma?
Yes, that's awesome.
It's all been a dream.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's going to wake up in a He's going to be in the shower.
Next to Bob Newhart.
All right.
Next to Bob Newhart and Bobby...
Patrick Duffy, Bobby Ewing.
Yeah, Bobby Ewing.
All right. Well, that music tells us it's time to take a short break here to do the top of the hour stuff. So we're going to take a short break here and do the top of the hour stuff.
Short break.
Because the music told me to.
Short break.
Force touch. Short break. Doesn't compel me when it's more so when it's louder. All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Force Touch.
Nomination period for the Pacifica Local Station Board elections is now open. If you or someone you know is interested in running as a listener or staff candidate, please visit the elections website at elections.pacifica.org to register and download a nomination package. Candidate nominations will be accepted from now until 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 14th. For more information about the election and to download a nomination package, please visit elections.pacifica.org or send an email to the National Election Supervisor at nes@pacifica.org.
KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and we now return you to Technology Bites, where Barrett has once again failed in his duties.
And that's it for Barrett time.
He took a star flight around the star cluster and forgot to write Barrett time again.
I blame Kirk. Actually, Jade Helm ate my Barrett time.
You should be blaming
God!
Nerds. Thank God I'm going to get out of town and get away from all the nerds.
So when is that? That's next week?
No, tomorrow.
So are you cosplaying as Din? Are you going to go as Din?
Sailor
No, I'm not going to go as a
Sailor
fat
Moon.
Din. I would actually probably do that. Being a fat, old, fat, bald guy, dressing as a woman superhero would at least be comical. Trying to dress like a male superhero, just, you know, not pull it off.
You know,
kind of like the Tron guy.
You should get a yellow jumpsuit and a samurai sword and go as Uma Thurman from Kill Bill.
That would kind of be awesome.
Or get a Thor costume, and when people ask you, keep claiming to be the new female Thor. Don't put on a wig or anything.
I vote Uma Thurman.
I'm going to Comic-Con in San Diego. Woo! I'm going tomorrow. It started, the preview night was tonight, and I really should have gone to that, but I didn't want to leave you guys in a lurch.
You're going
to
meet Archer.
I'm going to meet
like
Archer.
Lee did?
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to meet Archer and the rest of the gang.
All right.
That's going to be pretty cool. And there's a, I don't know. I'm frankly intimidated by it, but somebody said, you won't have a problem. You are Den of Earth. And it just, it's like, I remember Den of Earth. And so now I'm Den of Earth. And so I should cosplay Den of Earth, but I'm not going to cosplay.
Are you going to wear it? Well, you're going to wear a Cynthia shirt at the very least, right?
At the very least. Okay. I got my Doctor Who, my new Doctor Who shirt.
What's Den of Earth?
You ever see the movie Heavy Metal?
Or read the comic book back in the 70s?
I never read the comic book, and I think I've only seen about a fourth of the movie.
They used to play it all the time at Numbers before shows would start. Way back in the day.
I think I saw like the very beginning of it while I was in college at some point. I think they showed it, but I only saw like a little bit of it. And so I think about a year ago or something, I decided I need to sit down and watch this movie.
Bad idea.
And I started watching it, and I think I only watched about a fourth of it. I remember there was a taxi driver guy. I think that's about the story arc there is where I got, and then about all I remember.
It's not that great a film. It had so much potential, and they had all the different animators, you know, the different artists that were represented throughout the story.
Oh, no, you know where I stopped, I think, was there was a planet, and there are these people that were, I don't remember, like they were like tall people wearing flowing robes that were like moving around and had like an orb or something. I think that was where I stopped.
Well, watch it again.
I stopped right after Mickey couldn't make all the brooms stop carrying water up and washing dishes. It was somewhere right around there. I turned it off.
There were things like that that were good in their time, but they're not.
They don't stand up
very well to watch it now. I mean, when Heavy Metal magazine was a valid concern, was viable concern. It was something that I read as a young man, and the movie coming out was great. The soundtrack was just
phenomenal.
It was like the movie FM, you know,
right.
it was just
in a cartoon. Yeah.
What was the movie FM?
No static at all.
Peter's on AM right now.
No static at all.
There was a movie called FM, which is about a radio station. An FM radio station.
70s.
Like WKRP?
Except not funny.
Right.
Not funny like WKRP.
And a movie, not a TV show.
But the soundtrack was awesome. soundtrack was just killer. Just instead of like writing music for the
Steely
movie,
Dan did the credit, the main music for it, or the main.
They
song,
borrowed from
right?
pop culture. Got the songs right out of the top 40. And
what year was that? What
1978.
So it was like disco?
Q Sky.
No, it was like rock? Light rock and rock. It was Steely Dan who did the song for it. And yeah.
Yeah. The good old days.
So kind of like when Flash movies Gordon.
When movies were a buck and a quarter.
Flash Gordon Car Wash. There's another one with some good songs in it.
Well, that was more disco. And then there was the Bee Gees version of Sgt. Pepper's.
Right.
I remember
with
that.
George Burns.
Yeah.
And Peter Frampton.
Oh, my God. It was so
all
awesome.
All the girls were
I
nuts.
Loved Peter Frampton when I went up, too. So that movie was kind of heartbreaking. No, not Peter Frampton. All right. So what do we got next? I got to go over here. Got to pull up the show prep thing. And we have... We have to figure out a way to do this where I'm not playing it off my computer here. But it's okay. I don't mind.
In the world of technology, new things come out every day. Our judges will decide whether to try, buy, or fry.
Well, the first one's easy because try works real well when it's free. Microsoft has over 240 free technical ebooks that you can download. It's from the Microsoft MSDN blog. Last year, they gave away 80 ebooks, or earlier last year. And then last summer, they gave out 130 more. The collection includes some of last year's favorites, if you followed that, but additional titles as well, like Windows 10 for IT professionals. There are some non-Microsoft specific titles, like Always Be Closing, the ABCs of Sales in the Modern Era. They have other things about building cloud apps with Azure, installing Exchange Server 2013. Basically, if you're not already a member of MSDN and you want to get into, you know, you're doing any kind of Windows server management and that kind of stuff, you may want to see what you can grab from there. And the link is on our site. And then this one sort of overlaps. This is what got me thinking about it. You know, now to talk about tech for in disasters. If there's a hurricane, you know, how will you keep using
when
your
iPhone?
When
there's a hurricane. Not if, when.
Yeah, really. Well, yeah, whenever it happens. Although whenever there's some sort of disaster, basically like, frankly, with technology, the definition of disaster is a lot lighter. Like if the power goes out for more than about 15 minutes or things like that. But what started me on it was there's a, this one's a little different, but somebody's released the first USB-C battery. And, you know, people might remember it. The new MacBook has the single USB-C connector on it. And the big thing about USB-C is that it can do power through it, and it can do enough power to charge a laptop. And so somebody's come out with a battery that actually can that can charge a USB-C laptop as fast as it would from a wall outlet. And the thing, you know, right now, yeah, so you have to have a MacBook to do that, but or the Chromebook Pixel, so not the cheapest of the laptops out there. But this is the future. There's going to be more of this. So the deal is called it's MOS is the company. It's called the new Reach Go. And it can charge a laptop like a MacBook or a Chromebook Pixel over a USB-C connection at full speed. It can also charge two additional 2.1 tablets at the same time. So if you have a laptop, a smartphone, and a tablet, the Reach Go can charge all three of them at once. So that might be useful to somebody who's got that. It comes with a 15,000 milliamp hour capacity battery, which is enough to charge a new MacBook almost three times. And then you can charge the device in about 4 hours to fully charge it back up. It's even useful if all your gear is fully charged. It's got three USB ports. So it can also, you know, one USB-C and two USB type A, and it can also serve as a USB 3.0 hub, which, if you remember, the new MacBook only has a single USB-C connector. So that gives you some options to hook it up and add more devices without adding more, having to have more stuff to carry around than you already are. So it's going to be available in October from around $100. You can't pre-order it yet, but it is coming. So, you know, that looking at that and thinking about, you know, you have full speed charging and all that made me think about, well, what happens, you know, to all your devices? You know, the big thing you hear for people post, post disaster is always the ones who ran out of juice. You know, their phone ran out of juice, or they couldn't, or their, you know, radio, or, you know, some, you know, nowadays even laptop, et cetera. And so I looked up some links on some different possibilities for, you know, if you have a long-term power outage on things to do. So I visited, like, the Wirecutter has a couple of Anker USB battery packs. You know, the USB-C one I just mentioned was like a 13,000 milliamp hour. They're recommended, the Wirecutter's recommended charger is a 13,000 milliamp hour, and it's $30. So that's a pretty good, amount of juice that you can have on hand for pretty cheap, you know. So the thing about it with the hurricane stuff is you want to be prepared in advance. So make sure you think about what devices you want to get. If you're going to get a battery backup, if you're going to travel, it doesn't hurt. You know, it helps on the plane. You don't run out of juice. And if you have any trouble finding a charger, you don't have to get desperate if you have an external battery pack. There's links to all this stuff on, like I said, before, you know, for the news, there's links to all this stuff on the geekradio.com website right up on the front page. So you can look at, and there's extra products that I'm not talking about right now that you can find out more about. If you're worried that it's going to go so long that you're going to use up your battery pack, there are solar powered battery packs that you can recharge by sticking them out in the sun. Of course, during the hurricane, that's not very useful, but I guess in the days that followed, you'd be able to put it out in the
sun. There's always plenty of sun after a hurricane.
those are a little more expensive. Mercilessly
while your air conditioner waits to be repaired by a technician who never comes. Oh, wait. Flashback.
Yeah, you've lived it. Oh, so there's the Wirecutter on that one recommends one called the Cobra CPP 300, which is about $70 or $80 because you've got the solar panel to it. If you really want to go like serious, like you like to camp, or you want to have a lot of juice on hand and you want to do a bigger setup, then you want to probably look at stuff from Goal Zero, like the Goal Zero Sherpa. Has bigger solar panels. Now that starts, you know, bigger solar panels and bigger charging things lead to bigger prices. So they have one thing that's like a portable, like a generator, a recharge. They call it a rechargeable generator. So you can hook up a solar panel to it. It has a lot of battery to it, and so you can juice up a lot of stuff and run more devices. The other piece, so there's charging your stuff, and then there's having light, unless you want to go to bed when the sun goes down, or try to look around your house to the light of your phone. Your flashlight app is maybe not a good idea. You want to look at, like, LED lanterns. And the nice part with those is they're not that expensive. I looked at, on recharging stuff, I looked at things like where you can do the hand crank thing. But most of the time what it is a minute of cranking gives you 30 seconds of power.
I was going to say it's a lot of cranking for not much work, not much output.
Yeah, so if you're more of a maker type, if you're thinking the crank thing, you maybe want to like figure out the whole like bicycle generator kind of setup if you're wanting to do something more like that.
I had a bunch of candles, and I was like, well, I'll burn, because I didn't have power for a week after
Ike.
Was it Ike? Yeah. I didn't have power for a week, and so I just thought, oh, it gets dark, and I'll use a couple of candles, and I'm not sure how people survived, and functioned with just candles. I mean, maybe if they had lanterns, like kerosene lanterns, that's different. But
they probably weren't scented.
Well, not just that. I mean, that helps. The problem was that they flicker a lot. And so I was like, oh, I'll read here with this candlelight. And I was like, I don't know how Abe Lincoln did it because it was annoying and hard to read and it flickered.
You need someone became candles. President, you know, on that same model.
I think he read by the fireplace, though,
so the flicker
right?
kind of like evens out.
No, I think I ended up with two or three candles, and it's still...
On a candelabra? Did you have the proper
candle
device?
No, I didn't have a candelabra.
No, you had like three loose candles.
Yes,
what were you expecting?
You need your candles to flick it, not flicker.
So, yeah,
well,
that was
although
annoying.
If you put the candle right on your stomach, you lay on your back and put the candle between the book and you, as long as you like hot wax dripping on your stomach.
I was going
to
say,
it's
like 50
work.
Shades of Gray is what you're reading.
Candles
at this
are far
point.
Less...
I can spend the weekend this weekend, Pete.
Candles are far less romantic when you have no power or air conditioning
after your only means of light.
That was the other thing that was very weird was because most people had evacuated. So I was. There weren't a lot of people around, and I'm used to being inside my house with the windows down and the AC running or whatever, like a fan or some kind of sound in the house. So having, like, nobody doing anything, no cars on the road, no nothing, it's just complete silence, except you hear things that you would... So I was sleeping out on the porch because there was no air circulation in the house. So, you know, you hear things you, like, never hear normally, like... And, you know, it's like, oh, looters could be anywhere, you know. So you hear, like, dogs barking every once in a while and some random sounds outside and you don't know what's going on. It was also
So odd. Was there a rash of people dying by shooting fireworks off of different body parts, like their heads and their chests? And
apparently
stuff?
That was a thing this 4th of July. There's at
what?
Least two deaths from people who launched fireworks off their body. One off his head, and he died. Another one launched him off his body. And this is also comes on the heels of the guy who jumped in the water and said, oh. F the alligator.
F that gator. Chomp.
Yeah, that was killed. In orange, wow. So it's not far from where we broke.
Now, supposedly, one of his buddies went out there, or some of his buddies went out there, found the gator, shot the gator, and then pulled the gator up, and then took off before fish and wildlife got there. So... Texas justice has been carried out. Although now those guys are being sought because apparently it's a very illegal thing to do to kill an alligator like that.
It's totally illegal for him to kill the guy.
Right. That is a little bit of, I mean, that's a horrible, horrible thing, but.
So here's our tip for today is if your buddy is going to be a Darwin Award winner, don't follow after him. Don't try to fix it.
So what's the deal with the fireworks? Like, what kind of fireworks were they shooting off that killed them?
I heard things larger than, like, bottle rockets and Roman candles. Like, maybe some more of the, you know, like, the shells that go up and do the larger
smart.
Things. We've been knocking out a lot of code. All my news is anecdotal and hearsay, so you should not trust anything I say tonight. Fact check
Man
everything.
Man shoots off fireworks off the top of his head, dies instantly. Let's see. A 22-year-old man was drinking and celebrating the 4th of July at Murica, tried to launch a firework off the top of his head, killing him instantly, authorities said Sunday. Devin Staples and his friends had been drinking and setting off fireworks Saturday night in the backyard of a friend's home in Maine.
At least it was in Texas.
Apparently
That's
he
good.
Thought it was a great idea.
He joins the long list of people who died whose last words were, "Hey, watch this."
I'm just trying to think of like how it would
maybe a concussion. I mean, just a large concussion, maybe, or some kind of a.
I guess maybe
shock
if
wave.
It
yeah.
if it was something that was supposed to go far away and explode, like so, it actually had a pretty good percussion.
Yeah,
and it didn't. It blew up immediately. Maybe.
Well, Jade takes photographs of those almost every year. I guess you used to the Orange Show, but those are actually out of metal hats with some.
I've got
safety and engineering that goes into
it, I took
right?
some pictures of a couple of times I've had the opportunity to photograph. There's a group of people in Houston who design artistic fireworks hats that they wear on their heads that are filled with fireworks and that they launch and they dance around while these things are firing off their heads. And it's quite spectacular.
Well, I'm just thinking, because you went to
Las Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, and they're walking around shooting fireworks off their bodies and stuff, and
they're shooting them out of their hands.
When they don't talk about people die.
Those have
got to
be much smaller
there.
Caliber. I'm thinking these guys must have been doing something like a large kind of shell.
But the thing
is,
like, you wouldn't have that kind of thing normally, like, in the hands of an individual, because you can't go to a fireworks stand and buy that kind of stuff. Like, there's a certain class of fireworks you can get at
a
stand. You have to, you have to have a license or something to get above that.
Maybe he was a miner?
And half a stick of TNT?
A couple of blasting caps. One of the things.
Well, I think they're afraid of naming the type of firework for fear of, you know,
everyone will want to
libel
go and do
or...
It was a Four Loko.
Suddenly it'll become this kind of firework challenge. Like,
awesome.
And there was another guy who had built some kind of firework cannon or something, and I don't know exactly what that was.
Speaking of Four Loko, DEF CON is coming up. So if you have any inclination of going, now's the time to go ahead and get a room and make plans to get yourself
I think
in
they
Vegas
were,
the first week
I don't know
August.
If they still... There were still some room in Caesars at the DEF CON rate.
Yeah, I've got a friend that just got a room today, I believe, over at Caesars. Or one of the... Not on...
Is the,
not
are the other
the
two
ones.
Sold out?
Yes, I believe Bally's and Paris are gone.
I don't know. I just know on the DEF CON site they said there were still some at Caesars, which I assume means everywhere else was gone except Caesars, but I don't know.
Either that or maybe the Caesars is the next closest, because there's still a couple of like outlying venues that are somehow part of it, but they're not really super close. I think they just mean like Caesars is the closest you can get without having to get out and hike a little bit, I think.
Well, I'm glad to be, you know, it's a no-brainer for DEF CON to book your hotel early, because you can cancel it. Like, right up to the last
I bet
day.
There's a lot of rooms at the Gold Coast, which is right by the Rio.
Where is everybody? Hey, guys.
Well, that's assuming, you know.
But those rooms are really cheap. Because, you know, 2 years ago or something, I waited too late, and all the DEF CON book blocks were gone. And I went to try to book the Rio, and the rooms were like, well, on the weekdays they were cheaper, but on the weekend they were 200 and something a piece for the regular. I'm like, there is no way. Yeah. I guess I'm just not going to go to DEF CON or something. And then the Gold Coast is right next door, and they're like 30 or 40 compared to the Rios, which were way more. So that year I stayed at
And if you set up a table in the lobby at the Rio that says DEF CON advanced tickets, you can make a fortune.
Well, it looks like there's still rooms at the Paris.
Really? Oh, that's cool. That's close.
It's August 6th, right? Yeah.
August 6th through the 9th.
Now, are you going... Well, I guess there are two different things. Are you going and putting in the DEF CON code, or are you just going to see if there's just any reservations?
I'm going to the link from the DEF CON thing, and it says that there's Paris... Las Vegas, $287 a night, so that's a little bit more.
Well, oh, those have got they've got different levels those of rooms, nice so I bet those rooms. Are some of the suites or, you know, whatever, what have you.
So bring a lot of friends.
But they're not showing that there's anything available at Bally's, so.
Because everybody.
We chose correctly.
I was going to say, everybody went through the same, like, logic to figure out which one to stay in, and they all fell
for those
like
listening
us.
At home, DEF CON is the annual hacking conference in Las Vegas, and they keep changing hotels as they grow bigger and bigger.
23rd year?
This year, they're having a split between Bally's and Paris, where they had it at the Rio last year.
They outgrew a
years.
Single, whatever those places are called.
But, you know, if you've ever Convention been to, if you've ever been to Las Vegas,
what
these casinos
hotel?
Are
venue?
Casino?
Hotel?
Casino?
Casino.
Casino, yeah. They outgrew a single casino, so they decided to...
Well, if you've ever been to Vegas, casinos tend to be rather large. They're quite tall, there's a lot of rooms, and they're big. So even just walking from one end of the casino to the other...
They probably still had room enough for, like, rooms... For people
but not
at the Rio, but not
space.
Enough conference room space, I think. Right.
Yeah, the hallways were getting too crowded. There were pinch points.
But now they're going to have it split between two venues, and so you're going to have to walk back and forth between the venues. So I wonder how they're going to... I need a segue.
Bally's had some pretty big convention room space, and it looks like it's all in one huge block area.
Section.
Yeah.
The nice thing is this is like the first time, I guess the last couple of moves have been the moves where DEF CON has decided, hey, we're going to move DEF CON. Up until then, pretty much, they would pick a hotel, and they would like that hotel, but then they would get kicked out of that hotel. Sometimes it would last a year. Sometimes it would stretch it a couple years. But generally, shenanigans would be pulled, and the management would be like, hey, we may or may not like you guys, but you definitely can't stay here. So I think Alexis Park might have been the last kind of situation like that. So ever since then, though, it's been growing, almost like doubling in size, I want to say. Maybe not doubling, but very large growth. We're adding 5,000-6,000 people every year.
I think after 20, they dropped.
Did
I
they?
Think 20 to 21, it actually dropped.
Was that right song. After the documentary? The documentary came out. I'm trying to say that. Documentarian. The thing a documentarian
so
makes.
19 was the year they moved to the Rio, and then 20 was, of course, their 20th anniversary the next year.
Yeah.
I think 21 also at the Rio. I think that dropped, but I think 22 rose again.
Okay.
Maybe not, but I thought that was
I know
they were
pushing like 16,000 last year.
I thought they were over 20. That was over 21,000.
Whoa, this year could be huge then, if it was 20 or 21,000 last year. So anyway, it's also considered the world's most hostile network for just a little bit of time. So you bring a device, you can power it up, but there are thousands of fake access points. There's all kinds of attacks going on that you can think of, Wi-Fi. And I'm assuming that we're probably going to see a lot of cell phone attacks this
Somebody
year.
Needs to bring a BIOS box and Ooh. Just see if somebody hacks it.
Just be open. Just please hack me. See if it powered up in the hallway.
Yeah, amazing how geek culture has evolved, because when the show started, you could have a con of any type in like a large conference room at the Ramada Inn and wonder if you were going to fill it. And now it's starting to get to where, you know, look at Comic-Con, and some of those are now just so massive, and even, you know, celebrities and all that kind of
There's
stuff.
There's been
go.
A groundswell of people getting on the geek train, too. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have gone kind of mainstream. And not to say, like, hey, if you like this, you're not a real geek. But, like, the Doctor Who stuff is incredibly popular. Like, people that I never would have thought would like Doctor Who.
Like
reboot.
Jay.
No, I would say Jay's
like
a little...
my wife.
Okay, no, yeah. There
like
we go. Cynthia
wife.
Is a good thing, even though Jay is
she
kind of transitioning
thing,
over. But you've been geekifying her for a while now.
You've been working on that, but...
But the thing is that, you know, I can show things to Cynthia or try to introduce her to things, and she'll just, we tried to watch Star Trek Wrath of Khan, which I think is a fantastic movie. She hated it from the get-go. Just did not like it. Just thought the effects were bad. The acting was bad. She had no tie to the original series. So she didn't have that same kind of elation seeing Star Trek with the
original
cast on
the big
screen.
And also when it came out, you know, that's been a while.
Yeah, and it was dated, too.
That's like if you go... I watched the original Star Wars, like the original Star Wars, and, you know, it's like, wow.
But
like
she
some
watched
of the
those, and she enjoyed
are, like,
those.
Not real.
She got
yeah,
behind
the Yeah, but at the
story.
Time, what are you talking about?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
at the time...
In 1970...
Exactly. That is what I'm saying. At the time,
you're agreeing
it was amazing. And now I watched it 4 months ago.
It's still amazing.
And it's like, wow.
No.
Like, you can see obvious
the
matting.
I prefer models and
slides.
Strings to Jar Jar. I will take the old models and the stop frame.
I'm not talking about, I'm just talking about the technical ability. At the time, it was amazing what they did. But when you watch it now, how far things have advanced, it's obvious how bad some of it is for now's time.
I just want
to
see
if
the Stormtroopers
remastered Blu-ray then
get any more accurate in
if
the reboot.
Watch it. Have you watched it recently?
Well,
have you watched it recently?
I realize.
Have you watched it recently?
Answer the question.
Like less than a year ago, yes.
Okay. I mean, I remember the last time I watched the original Star Wars.
And I don't
movie.
Mean the digital fixed versions. I mean like the original.
Do you have
original.
The original originals?
Yes.
I'd like to get a copy of this. The last time I watched the original of the original Star Wars, I remember watching it and thinking as the X-Wings and the TIE Fighters were flying by, you could actually kind of see a slight discoloration.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
I didn't notice when I was a kid.
Remember that.
But I watching it now, you can kind of see that this is a gel moved across this thing. You can see the flaws. And not to say that it's bad, but because of what we're used to now, what we see now, we look at this and we can see the flaws in
like the whole
still fantastic.
Luke Skywalker's.
Not saying it's not fantastic. It is fantastic.
No, but how can we harp on it when I mean,
like Luke Skywalker's land speeder, you know, like the where it's supposed to be the shadow underneath it when it's moving. Like there's definitely times where it's like the shadow's just kind of bouncing around from frame to frame.
No, but when it happened
and...
the first time, it was cool. It was like, that's amazing. Yeah. It looks like it's actually floating
compared
along.
To what it existed before. Yes, it was amazing.
I mean, even McFly's hoverboard was cool in its day,
Well, remember when bicycles had big wheels in the front and little wheels in the back?
I don't remember that.
Ooh, I found out.
What are you going to... Jay how might, far Jay, are you going to go?
Jay might
you
know? Remember I mean, that, but I don't remember that.
Like, we're touching on a nerve here for Greenhouse.
Well, it's... I think
okay, here's...
That's like saying Han shot first. Come on.
This is the point. This is the point I think we're trying to make, and it goes back to, like, introducing people to this stuff now. If you didn't see it when it first came out and you did not develop that affinity for it, it's hard to come in 20, 30 years later and look at it and be impressed.
And appreciate it.
And appreciate it because you don't have a romantic or historic or nostalgic yeah. tie to when it came out, and you're trying to watch it for the first time, and it's hard. It's difficult. But I think that will get better with time because
George Lucas will keep editing them?
No, because that becomes a charm unto itself, because my wife absolutely loved the movie Tarantula, which was filmed in 1950, whatever. And it was, you know, just it was a real spider, but they used forced
perspective
to make it look big. And you knew it was fake. I mean, it was obviously, this is just horrible. It's black and white, but it was awesome to see. It was like, that's great. You appreciated it for the kitsch value. And I think Star Trek, unfortunately, is going to start to get a little bit of kitsch.
Well, the other thing that Cynthia had to be missing is, for those of us who lived it in real time, coming off of the steaming pile that was Star Trek, the motion picture, Wrath of Khan was a real breath of fresh air. I mean, it was a lot more like a real episode of Star Trek that expanded out to 2 hours and made, you know, doing all the things that you liked from watching the TV show.
I thought and that the first Star Trek movie was fantastic. It was more Gene Roddenberry than just about anything else that's come since.
Although Carlos Montalban's chest in Wrath of Khan's pretty...
Plastic?
Yes.
Was it plastic?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if that was a prosthetic or not.
Notice the gold chain and how the gold chain never moves except maybe the medallion at the bottom.
Okay. I mean, whoever did Khan's chest in that movie also did a lot of the costuming for what was the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger about Total Recall?
Total Recall.
Total Recall.
With the woman with three boobs.
That was Khan's breastplate enhanced,
zoomed and enhanced.
They just took two of them and overlapped it in the middle.
So at any rate, going back to the original point, Doctor Who, right? So we're on a real tangent here. Doctor Who, the reboot, the what they call the reboot of the new series, which still touches on all the old stuff, is just very good storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good storytelling.
Good music, good graphics, good everything.
Fun
the direction is good.
Nice
yeah.
to watch. And you don't have to be a nerd necessarily to get it. I mean, I think all shows or movies or stories about time travel are problematic. They always are problematic because paradoxes and all that. And Doctor Who just kind of like latches onto that and says, we don't care.
It's but just timey-wimey. I mean, don't worry about it.
Now, okay, I maybe haven't seen... I don't know what of the Doctor Who's. I'm assuming it's after the reboot. Like I saw the Weeping Angels episode.
Yes, yeah, that's after the 2005 reboot.
I saw that one.
Yeah.
And I saw the one where he travels to the end of the Earth when the Earth's gonna like
also post reboot. That was the first
gonna
season
go
of
supernova,
the reboot.
And the last human is like a stretched
face
on a
Boz.
Yeah, I've seen that one. So those are the two I've seen. But it's still, I mean, it's still Doctor Who, right? It's still very kitschy and kind of like...
Well, it's not trying the original Doctor Who series, the budget was very low. There was no real, I mean, they just did the best they could with what they had.
The thing is, it's kind of trying to bridge that gap. It's what it felt to me. It's trying to bridge that gap to stay true to the old kitschy, cheap, goofy Doctor Who, but use some of the modern like special effects that they can do, but they still use some bad stuff as well. It's like a mixture of bad,
what?
You know, stuff and
the,
and
the
modern
big
stuff.
Thing on the reboot is there's a lot of episodes where the key is the storytelling, where they, you know, they set up the story and then they set up a problem that you really wonder how in the world, you know, without, you know, with the limitations of what the story says, how in the world are they going to solve it? And then they come up with a very clever way to solve the problem that works. That's not a cheap, you know, there's not the Deus Ex Machina. Oh, wait, I have the The frambulator's
don't
in my back pocket.
No,
I'll push the reverse button.
Don't spoil.
You haven't watched any of it?
No, Rakina, I haven't watched the movie yet.
Oh, I think he's just using that generic.
He's using the term, not the movie.
Okay. I mean,
okay, never mind.
He just meant the generic term.
I'm very anti-spoiler, though, so I will be the first to jump on the spoiler wagon, regardless of the merit.
Oh, really? So you mean, because I've just spoiled every single Doctor Who episode that ever has been made. Because never has like, oh, wait, I've got a secret army of 10,000 that's going to step in here and help me. It's always one dude and his friends against whatever.
You remember that episode of Gilligan's Island where they almost got off the island, but Gilligan ruined it?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, you just ruined all of Gilligan's Island for me. Except for maybe the specials.
The specials.
No, that's right. They somehow always get back on the island. How do they do that? They got back to Hawaii every one time, and then somehow they wound up back on the island with the Globetrotters.
Yep.
I don't know how that works.
So anyway, so the conventions like DEF CON going all the way back to the original.
Yeah, they've gained a lot of ground. They're much more popular, and I would say even Comic Con, and that's the thing. So is stuff like Doctor Who, and like even I didn't like Battlestar. Well, I like Battlestar a little bit. Are those
the reboot
gateway things?
Or the original.
I like the reboot and the original. I watched the original. I liked the original as a kid because I was in the 70s and I was too young to know critical differences and this is awesome spaceships, little monkeys and
Buck
dog
Rogers.
Suits.
Space 1999.
I liked Aaron Gray.
Space 1999.
And Buck Rogers and the little green dude and Hawk dude. Yeah. What was his Twinkie.
Twinkie.
One of the two. Those have different meanings.
Tweaker.
One's a snack food. The other one, explains the BBD. So the question is geek culture pervasive or is all this stuff converting people to be geeks and it's still kind of a geeky thing?
I think right now it is really just kind of overflowing into pop culture. It's
hip to be square.
It's hip to be square and cool at the same time somehow. So you have, I think there is a certain group. I guess one of the schisms that's happening in the geek community is that there are actual socially well-adjusted people who are, physically fit and do well.
Geeks have made a lot of money.
That come to the cons and host shows, and there's a lot of TV shows about geek culture and stuff, and it's done by people. I mean, yes, they're really geeks. They really do seem to like it, but they don't seem to be the people that we knew.
They're not hideous. They don't have disorders, skin disorders, breathing disorders.
On the other
disorders,
hand, DEF CON dangerous. Still has...
Oh, yeah. DEF CON's real.
They say, I was reading an article that said that for San Diego Comic-Con, which is the biggest comic book convention on the planet, that of all the people who try to get tickets to it, only 6% succeed.
6%?
Doesn't like Harvard have better admission rates? Probably not, but that's
they
rice.
Only have they only have so much space, and they will never have a problem selling it out. So they only sell a certain number of tickets. It sells out in under 15 minutes. And then is it
lottery based? You explained to us how you went through this. Well, you didn't actually go through the standard process.
No, I got pressed this time because I failed the last two times to get a regular ticket. And what you do is you sign onto a webpage, which everybody does. And then they bring you into a waiting room, and it's not necessarily a lottery, but it's based on the nanosecond that you entered in, and you get a chance to go in and then pick your ticket. So depending on how long somebody's there, there are other people buying tickets. So you get in a queue, and they all sell out. But what's weird about Comic-Con, and I'll talk more about it when I get back, what I've discovered is, okay, so you have this mad scramble to get your tickets, and that's all you get is your tickets. Then you have to wait another month or 2 months for them to open up the hotel lottery because you cannot book a hotel.
Whoa. So you could possibly wind up with going to the con but not really having
not
a place,
have a
to,
place
stay.
To stay.
Sleeping in your car.
At least not nearby. So what happens is then months later, they open up the hotel lottery. So what you do at the hotel lottery is they publish a list of the con hotels, which – are and where they are and whether they're on the shuttle route, whether they're, what the location is.
Do you have any idea what the percentage of con tickets to hotel rooms is?
But what they do is that you pick your six top hotels in order of preference. and you go
this
in,
is so lame.
You go into the lottery, and then you quickly select your six hotels.
So you
got to
pick
it.
One of the like non-air conditioned ones is like number three. So you've got one in there that you'll definitely get.
Yeah,
it's like signing up for college.
Well, then
your fallback.
Well, what happens is that you log onto the page, you wait, then it opens up. You get the form, and this year the form didn't work properly, so a lot of people were complaining about that. But you pick your six, and then you also tell them whether if you don't get a downtown hotel, do you want to be on a waiting list? And so you can be on a waiting list, and then they'll come back a week later or so and tell you which hotel you got, if any. And I actually somehow managed to enter it twice. And one, I didn't get a hotel, and the other, I did get a hotel. So I got a hotel, but it was probably about 5 miles away from the convention, which isn't horrible. I mean, it's not that big a deal, but I was on the waiting list. So I was actually able to get a hotel closer to the convention center and cancel the other reservation and get it. But even beyond that, so you've got this mad dash to get tickets, which you're lucky if you can get them. Then you have to mad dash for the hotel. And now this is where it really sucks. It's like they have panels, right? So you've got the showroom floor, which is cool. You go see all the exhibits from all the different vendors. ThinkGeek is out there and all these other people are out there. But if you want to go to one of the panels, like they have the Doctor Who panel, they're going to have the new Star Wars is going to have a panel, and they have this thing called Hall H. So what you do is you line up to get into to Hall H, and if you get into Hall H, once you get in, you can stay in as long as you want. But if you leave, you got to get back in line. So people line up the night before.
I have 3 pee bottles and 8 containers of Mountain Dew.
And so for 10, 12, 15 hours, people are in line, camping, doing whatever, waiting to see if they can get in. And then they're going to stake out a spot, and you can't, unless you're willing to commit like 24 hours of your day to getting to that one panel, you're probably not going to get in. So it's just, it's all about waiting. And the people that are willing to do this, the people that are willing to get up first thing in the morning, get online, order their tickets, are the ones that get tickets. The ones that get online, get in line, get their hotel, people that are willing to camp out. Mm-hmm. And that's how diehard.
Is it possible for you to like show up early, get in line, and then a few hours into it, after the line's really long, just tell somebody like, I'll give you $500 to trade.
Oh, you can hold places in line. If you people tag team, they'll say like, okay, there'll be 2 or 3 people. And it's like, okay, I need to go to the bathroom. I need to go take a break.
No, I'm just saying like you sell your spot to somebody else.
I would imagine you probably could.
Because you might could make some money that way.
I think we need to do a public service announcement. So Comic-Con is not cool. Doctor Who is not cool. Bow ties are not cool. So just go back to watching football and let's get off this lottery thing. I want to go to Comic-Con, but the lines and lottery.
Talking about why geek culture is kind of ascendant, my thought on it is, the thing that's changed in the course of the life of this show is you don't have to explain anymore why somebody would want the latest technology. When we started with a computer, it was like, you know, oh, what, do you want to play a bunch of games? And that was sort of it, you know, on getting a new computer or why you needed a new graphics card or those kinds of things. Where now everybody has a smartphone. And that, you know, that is a geeky device, and you have to learn enough, but it's simple enough that a regular person can use it. But they do get pulled into the sort of geek culture with that. And so apps and the kind of texting and all those sort of things have become simpler. So you don't have to put in all that.
I'm not sure if Dave has a smartphone yet. We may have 1 or 2 ex-listeners or old listeners out there that are still a little bit behind in
tech. I was going to say that's one of the things that I love is that when because this is how my opinion, like it's hip to be a geek, like maybe like counterculturally hip on some level, because I don't think people really like most people really say like I want to be a geek, but people will say it. Like it's hilarious. Like I see people that are obviously not in any way, shape, or form a person who's into any kind of like super knowledge of some particular thing that would classify them as a geek.
Well, they tweet, I'm such a geek.
Or whatever, but they say it. Like, they're like, they like take a picture of their food and they post it to Instagram and they're like, oh, I'm such a geek. Right?
People get an iPhone and they say, I'm a geek.
If it's a plate of headless bat, I'll let them have it.
So I'm just thinking like they say it like it's cool, right? Like in a way.
Like, well, it's like a shame thing, but in a cool way.
It's self-efficating. Is that a word? Yes.
But at the same time, it's kind of like but it's not just negative. It's also like it's become where it's not necessarily cool, but almost like a respected thing. Like like if you really are a real geek. But in their mind, of course, real geek doesn't necessarily mean like somebody that like never bathes and
can't
take care of themselves.
They're just not,
you know. But it means somebody that's like super smart about technology, you know. And they're like, "Oh, I'm such a geek." So
that's
they're kind of joking about themselves, but also imagining
right, self-deprecating.
It is, but I think it's part of that, but it's also a view of a geek as somebody who is like super intelligent and whatever, not just somebody who's like, you know.
Well,
I think
also one of the things that happens too is that people who are knowledgeable, let's just say about computers and technology, I mean they're useful now. It's good to have one around. It's good to know someone who can kind of help you solve a problem or make your technology work or give you some advice. So people see geeks getting treated more with respect, and so they say, well, I want to be a geek. I'm a geek. You know, I fix something. I'm a geek. So I don't know if that's good or bad. It's, you know, I'm on Facebook. I'm a geek. You know, I can leave comments on YouTube videos. I'm a geek. And therefore, my opinion is
I can bat a head off a chicken. I'm a geek.
I said bat. I got it wrong. I went all Aussie. I meant to go circus.
You're so metal.
Like in the Western.
Metal geek.
Just like in the Western, though, there's that moment, though, when, you know, you've either got to be the real gunfighter or not. You know, you're going to go out on the street at high noon. And so when something goes wrong, you know, when the phone doesn't work, when the computer doesn't do what it's supposed to, that's when you can tell where the real geek is or not. You know, there's the person who talks about it all the time, who then starts getting the like shifty eye and, oh, wait, I got to go kind of thing. And then there's the people who can actually fix it. And a lot of the time, I think they're trying to leverage off of, you know.
There's a lot of it now where it's like a fashion thing. It's like a fashion statement, sort of like, I'm going to wear nerd glasses or I'm gonna wear this nerd shirt.
I'm always gonna wear jeans and a black turtleneck shirt.
Like, yeah. So it's
wear
like
a Dalek mini dress.
It's a choice that it's a fashion choice or a fashion statement they're making to like say that or to dress that way or whatever. It's not like who they are, you know.
I think though it's partly though because geeks had their lifestyle was more integrated with technology in the first place, and so they had a model that people could follow. And so that's part of why people have gone down that path, and it'll evolve more in the future.
Yeah, the online stuff did take – I mean, they co-opted – you know, like there's a lot of stuff that's, I would say, common vernacular now that was co-opted out of –
Ping
me. Yeah, you know, I mean, even just like – I hate that it's called like hashtags now, but like the pound sign and just, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. People, you know, like LOL, that's out there. You know,
AOL.
Like whiskey – AOL is no longer out there all that
SOL.
Much.
SOL.
SOL, a lot of people are.
Well, you know, for example, okay, here's a side
of it. Rafflecopter?
Yeah.
Raffle skates?
Yeah.
There's as the vernacular has come along and become co-opted, I remember my wife telling me that she was for a long time confused because people send her email and with a joke and then they'd say LOL and she goes, why are they telling me lots of love? You know, because that's what people think that's what it meant, or just what it used to be.
Well, I know I've talked before on here about how, you know, my worlds collided the first time I saw a full page ad for a Dell computer that was a gaming computer.
For the win.
And yeah, and at the top it said FTW, and I was like, wow, that's really edgy on Dell's part, because my perspective was tattoo culture, where FTW does not mean for the win.
Even kind of punk culture. Maybe,
huh? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, man, Dell's really like edgy there.
So is that when you bought your first Dell?
So, well, but the other thing though is there's sort of, you know, mentioning tattoos, there's sort of the there's an interesting confluence to some of that stuff is because tattoos isn't a particularly geek thing, but you know, you look at the kind of hipster deal and they assemble the pieces of sort of geek type culture. You know, sysadmin beards seem to be, I know they call them lumberjack beards, but they were more commonly on guys who ran well,
that,
computers.
Maybe this is why I'm
that
not...
came out of hippie culture, though, yeah, because a lot of the early computer guys were from hippie culture.
Yeah, they just didn't bathe. They didn't do anything. The beards just kind of grew out of the 60s. So this is, I think, this is one of my hidden fears is just like, you know, with the early hipsters, you go back 15, 20 years, and you can see, we'd see even 15 years of that kind of thing. But there's such a big backlash and such like, you know, like it's derogatory. You can't have a mustache and wear a plaid shirt in this town, you know, without derogatory kind of comments, you know, whether they're in the air. And that's what I'm afraid that's going to happen to the geek thing is that there's going to be, not, I don't think there'd ever be a geek backlash. But just,
oh,
you know, too many people on the
geek backlash. There's already.
Well, I know there's an anti-intellectualism kind of groundswell going on in the U.S. right now, but I'm just talking about, just, you know, I'm afraid that if it gets too much out there, it's like your favorite band. You just don't want it to have too much sunlight on it. I don't want that much sunlight on geek culture. It could kill a lot of sports.
There's sort of a
already
sort of
there.
They have their own TV show. Game over.
Game
there's
over.
There's kind
man.
Of a real limit on the geek backlash because, like, Rorschach in The Watchmen, it's like. And the city's smartphones will stop working and they'll turn to me and say, help us. And I'll say, no.
It'll be kind of like Doc Martens.
Yeah.
Right? You know, because Doc Martens were originally like part of the...
skinhead culture, really.
Well,
right?
Like punk, underground, skinhead 60s, culture.
60s, yeah.
Stuff.
Britain. Not like the racist
originally,
ones, but the old working
Britain,
class. Yeah.
But then it became
punk,
like
not racist,
U.S.
Yeah.
Like punk, alternative culture. But then punk, alternative culture got very popular. And Doc Martens became super common, and that's kind of passed. It's kind of moved on. It's not.
They're still comfortable though.
Doc Martens are still a part. Yeah. They're still
no
a
longer
part
made in the
of
UK,
culture,
though.
But they're not popular like that anymore. But they still exist. They still
Vans.
Serve a purpose.
Vans.
That was my skull.
I actually still wear Vans.
Those are still out there in although, skater circles a little
see,
bit.
See, I never liked the slip-on Vans. Like you know, I wear Vans old schools, which are lace-ups, but it's like an old style of Vans.
Oh, I have the checkerboard Vans slip-ons.
You know yeah, what's see, gotten really popular that's kind of got me upset? Shark jumping. That's a thing now.
Ever since Henry Winkler did it.
Figuratively or literally?
Both.
Or did we just did we just demonstrate both in one single
careful Jay, don't talk too much about shark jumping or you'll be wrecking our big 20th anniversary show.
That would be awesome,
shark jumping
at our 20th anniversary party.
Jump a shark.
Jay will
Lee
have to
jumps
jump
a shark.
Jump a shark.
We're going to need a different venue now. We may have to go down to Kima.
Well, you can do it on top of cones, like up there on the
oh, there we
second
go.
Floor.
Isn't there a SeaWorld somewhere around?
No, we'll just do a slip and slide.
Can I use one of your motorcycles?
Sure. I will donate a motorcycle to the cause.
Give him a scooter.
We're going to need some insurance.
Well, it's an interesting pool. Time. It's an interesting time for technology. It's an interesting time to be a geek. I think it's all right to self-identify as a geek. I think... you know, it's important to do stuff that you care about and that you're interested in. And I think one of the things that's making Comic-Con interesting to me is not because I'm necessarily a comic book fan or into superhero movies or whatever, but the convention itself is a thing to see. It's a phenomenon now that I want to go. And I think that's what's drawing a lot of people. They want to go and they want to see this. They want to experience this event.
So you get some interesting backlash. Again, especially in like comic book culture, right, where these people have been into comics this whole time, and then you get people who just think it's interesting. It's become popular, and so
and
they want to
dress up. I mean, cosplay.
And they
want to
dress up
because
it's fun. And but yeah, there's a lot of backlash. Like, oh, you're not a real comic book person.
I understand
that mentality, but at the same time, it's become like aggressive about it.
But
there's
yeah,
also backlash
the
against
book.
That.
But there's backlash in all aspects of whether or not, you know, what your brand loyalty is and whether or not you're a true devotee of whatever. So, like, Canon
or
versus
sports.
Nikon.
Sports as well, yeah.
Yeah, there's always going to be a... You know, I always thought that geek
the true
culture
fans
was a,
or the Uber.
Geek culture was all about being, you know, like, when geeks came together, like, for 2600 meetings or for early DEF CONs, you know, it was a chance to be with like-minded individuals, and you felt like, I'm finally a part of something. But now what it means to be a geek or be a nerd or be a techie is a little bit more diluted. And so if you're going to identify with that group, you're identifying with a much more amorphous or, you know, nebulous
thing. It's also
thing.
Easy to work in tech and not care about the culture.
There's a lot more of that.
I had a guy at work who was a system administrator, never seen Princess Bride. I swear I could have just punched him.
What?
There's a lot of... I mean, I've known people, like, they could care less about anything. They got it because it's pays decent money. It's a good job. They can hop and make more money. And, you know, they go to work. They do that work. They leave that, and they couldn't care less about it.
They don't have a server farm at home. They're not running VMs or anything.
Poor people. I think with the older geeks, a lot of the pushback and a lot of the and I don't want to say like weird feelings, but just kind of some of the uneasiness is that the very things that we used to get, you know, made fun of in high school for and persecuted for and, you know, that set us apart. You know, we would go to conventions, we go to stuff, we go to the lunchroom and everyone was out on the, you know, out, or we go to the library, I guess, at lunch whenever was out on the playground. And, you know, and those were kind of our spaces and that's where we did that. So it's kind of weird to see, and not to say like, you know, like the jocks and the cheerleaders, but it's kind of weird to see like the more popular people and like Jay said, the people with social skills and the people that just, you know, generally were a lot more outgoing and were not spending their lunches in the library. To see those people there, it's kind of a weird thing because, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, those were the people that were teasing and making fun of this whole scene. That's, and to see them embrace it now, it's
back
weird.
Back then, I don't think there was they didn't see anything in it for them, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now, they can see there's something
still, in it. I might go get a gym membership and bulk up and go kick some sand at Comic-Con. I mean, I'm not going to do that, but my inner child says, like, hey, you should go do that. Geeks, you know?
Nerds!
On the positive side, though, now, you know, basically, all the cosplay and that stuff is, you know, back in the day, you know, you would have loved to have been able to dress up like Luke Skywalker or a stormtrooper or whatever, and your opportunities to do that were limited to Halloween. And that was it. You had no other opportunities. Where now,
I got shut down a lot out of the house events. Trying to go.
It started. It's the reason they happened. I think. You know, it's the reason a lot of these events actually started is so that people could, you know, wear their costumes or dress up like whatever their interest was on that. And I think that's pretty cool.
And then the furries took it too far.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the bronies followed.
Well, it looks like we are coming up towards the end of the show. Is that right?
Incorrect. Two more minutes. Winding down. Ending on bronies and ponies and yiff. Whoop. I meant to say furries.
Wow.
Wow. I don't even know what that means.
You took it to a whole...
I said
Jeff.
Luckily, the nice thing about tech is we're so far ahead, that is not one of the words that the FCC is yet aware of. So we're fine.
Wow.
Perfect show. Well, hopefully...
Saved by the bell.
You know, thanks to everybody that came out to the Geek Gathering. It was a little more on the low-key side.
I missed you by about, like, not even 2 minutes. I was, like, in there. I had dead Kindles and everything for you.
Aww.
Yeah, we closed it down. I stayed late.
You didn't bring them tonight.
No, I came. No, I'm sorry.
All right, that's okay. Maybe next week.
Next week.
Perfect show. All right, well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. That was a great conversation. We appreciate you being with us. Hopefully next week we'll have the full crew.
If you're a new geek and you're listening to us, you're totally cool because we're still underground.
I should have hopefully some decent Comic-Con stories to tell when I get back next week.
And photos.
Yeah, you're going to post photos.
I should be there
the
in person
time, right?
Next one.
What's that, Pete?
I should be there in person this next week.
Awesome. Yay. It's a fundraiser. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually,
all right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
L. Joy Williams, Pacifica's National Election Supervisor, with an important message. This summer, we will hold separate but simultaneous listener and staff elections for seats on the local station board. Candidate nominations will open on June 15th. To vote or run in the upcoming election, you must be a member of the station by July 14th. For listeners, this means a donation of at least $25 or 3 hours of volunteer station work between July 15th of last year and July 14th of this year. To see the election calendar, sign up for election updates, and learn how to get involved, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Your voice and your vote in Pacifica are important. Remember, you must be a member of the station by July 14th in order to participate in the election. So don't delay, renew, or join today.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
Your tax-deductible car donation helps make great radio. When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Proceeds from your vehicle donation benefit KPFT. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. Our car donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and an optimal charitable tax deduction. Call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org.